Bible class, young and old. And thank you to our young people for keeping the average age right down. And long may that continue. Well, we'll be very pleased to hear our brother Jeff shortly. And he's going to speak to us about a wonderful lady in the Bible, Abigail. And we're going to take the reading sort of as we go. So welcome to those who have just joined us. And we've got the happy problem of not enough seats. So that is wonderful. Please come and join us, and you're very welcome. Okay, well, we're very pleased to invite our brother Jeff to talk on the subject of, sounds a bit cold actually, the subject, the person of Abigail.
Thanks very much, Graham, and good evening, everybody. Wonderful group here. As Graham said in the prayer, we've got a lovely mixture of age groups, and that's just wonderful. Now, on Sunday, I indicated that we would like to have a think tank, and the school kids and maybe the young people are going to be part of that think tank, I hope. So what I'd like to do, and I know it's going to mean a bit of movement of chairs and so on, maybe up the front here we could have one think tank. We've got three participants here. You don't all have to be in it, that's okay. But if you want to be a part of a think tank, could you bring your chair up the front, and we'll have a little circle here of young people who would like to think tonight. I'll tell you what you'll be required to do, and then maybe you can come up and join the group. I'll have a series of questions, and I don't have any set answers for those questions. All you have to do is offer what is common sense to you. So that's what the think tank is going to be doing. And it'll be a speed decision-making. That means you have 60 seconds to quickly sort out your responses, and then you can tell me and tell everyone else what your answers are to those topics we raise. So, think tank out the front. Who's coming? We've got three. I know you're great thinkers down here. Oh, this is wonderful. Look at this. Four girls onto one boy. Any more boys? Just before we get into a circle, you might like to look at the screen as well. So just get your seats so that you can see the screen. Good on you. Thank you for that. And another. Move back a bit there, Sean. That's a boy. Oh, this is great. Thank you. All right, now that means that this group will be thinking from time to time, and it doesn't exempt you from thinking. So we'll take advice from everybody. It doesn't matter who. So let's move on to the subject of Abigail, and we have no action. Ah, there we go. Right. So, Abigail, the word Abigail, Hebrew, of course, means my father is joy. And I couldn't help but try to get the next movement going.
Try the
space bar. Space bar? No. Sue said, what if the computer doesn't work? I don't know what's happening.
Here we go.
Ah, that's Abigail, our daughter. We're very proud of Abigail. So I'll try it up here. See if I can keep things moving. Okay, so Abigail. And this story is real theatre. There is absolutely no doubt about it. It's a wonderful story that could fit onto any stage. And it's about the beauty and the beast, among other things. And it's a drama based, as you can see, on the 1st of Samuel 25. Let's have a look at the place and the people in which this drama takes place. First of all, on the left, you can see the setting. And I'll just point to a couple of things here. There's the Dead Sea. There's Hebron, which means Jerusalem's about there. And here we have the wilderness of Zin and the wilderness of Paran, which is mentioned in this chapter. And it's partly in that area that this takes place. But we also move up to the western side of the Dead Sea here to a place called Maon and also Carmel. This is where a lot of the activity is going to take place. And we also have these wonderful players in the theatre. There's Abigail, beautiful Abigail. There's Nabal. And there is David. So those are the three characters, but there is one other. Who is the other? That's correct. It's God. And God, as we all know, and all the Sunday school children know, that God is all-knowing, he is all-powerful, he is all-wise, he's ever-present everywhere, and he is eternal. So these are the players, and we must remember that God is above all those things. Here's the plot. I'll let you read that through. There's no need for me to read it. Now, I've highlighted four words there: react, respond, cause and effect. Who'd like to just offer a suggestion as to the difference between react and respond? Let's start with react. What does react suggest?
It almost implies that you haven't really thought about your action.
Uh-huh. Okay, thanks, Catherine.
React might be a bit emotional.
Emotional? Yes, I would say that's true. And so, what about respond? I think that's probably right, Graham. A reaction is like a knee jerk, and sometimes we react in the wrong way, whereas a response can be a considered response. So they are some differences that you might like to consider. And cause and effect, of course, we know that much of life is about cause and effect. If we cause something to happen that's bad, then the effect is going to be bad, isn't it? If we cause something to be good, then the effect is likely to be good. So cause and effect is really what happens in this drama about Abigail. So in a nutshell, let's have a look at the acts in this drama. First of all, we find that David, and this is the person who became King David later on. So David asks a favour. That's all he does. And there's someone called Nabal who rejects it. That's Acts 2. Act 3, David reacts. Act 4, Abigail responds. Act 5, David recognises his reprieve. And Act 6, redemption prevails. Can you see the flow of the story already? And Act 7 is love all. So let's move on to have a little bit closer look at these characters. I don't want to preempt everything you all know already, but this is just a refresher. First of all, Abigail. And Abigail, as the name means, is the joy of her father. And she has some wonderful attributes. Have a look at them. She's God-fearing. She's wise. She's beautiful. And she's intelligent. She's determined but humble, and she's very hard-working. They're wonderful virtues, aren't they, for a young woman to have. Let's have a look at Nabal. Her husband, Abigail's husband, is Nabal. And if we look at the features of Nabal's personality, we see that he's surly, means he's looks exactly as he does in that photograph. He's surly, he's harsh, he's mean, rude and evil in his doings, we're told, in the chapter that we've got on the board here. But he was also rich. And we see the word great in a lot of the Bible versions, and that is what the word means. It means rich. He was, at the same time, a drunk. And, of course, that would have helped him to be very stubborn and ill-tempered. Can you imagine that as a match? Abigail and Nabal. And now we come to David. David's name means beloved, and he was God-fearing and God-like. He was brave but impetuous. Maybe the children would like to know what that word impetuous means. Anyone like to give us a synonym for that?
Rushing into things.
Rushing into things, that's right, that's right. And maybe we're a bit like that sometimes. We rush into things without thinking too much about them. So he's brave but impetuous. He was also handsome, we're told, and he was wise and prudent. So these are the key players. Now, we all know about God, so we won't need to list his attributes, will we? Okay, back to the wilderness. This is what the country's like. This is where the play is set, and it's very, very barren. But apparently it's good enough for pasture, and this is where Nabal had sheep. We'll find out a little bit more about that. Let's have a look at Act 1. David is going to seek help. Now, his situation is a little bit diabolical because he's in that wilderness of Paran with 600 men. Now, why is he in the wilderness? Well, one of the problems is that he is a fugitive from King Saul. King Saul is after his blood. That's why he's there. He's escaping King Saul. He's also mourning the prophet Samuel's death. Samuel was a person he greatly admired. And there might be adults that you greatly admire. And so Samuel was a person that David greatly admired, but he had died. And so David is not only escaping Saul, but he's also mourning Samuel's death. Now, while he's down there, there are other Israelites who are herdsmen and shepherds, and David and his 600 men have been very good to them. They've protected them from the Philistines, and they've respected their property. They haven't nipped out at night, grabbed a few jumbucks, and taken them home and had them for a meal. But he does need food and provisions. He's heard of rich Nabal's presence, and Nabal had 3,000 sheep grazing in the area and 1,000 goats. So there's plenty of food. At the same time, it was shearing time, and shearing was a little bit like harvest time. Now, harvest was really important to people living in this time because they were bringing food in, effectively. And it doesn't mean it's any less important now, but it was a time of great celebration when harvest was on. Likewise, shearing was a great time. And so they had festivities and there were plentiful supplies around the place at that time. So David's men are sent off to meet Nabal to ask them, can they help out with some supplies? So David sent 10 men to Carmel. Remember where Carmel was in that second map that we had, to ask Nabal for supplies in return for the respect and the care which had been shown to David and by David and his men to Nabal's herdsmen. So there we are, right in that position there. There's Carmel and there's Maon. So the men went up from Maon to Carmel in order to ask for help. Ah, here we are. Think tank number one. So here's the question. If you needed help, how would you approach Nabal? So you've got 60 seconds to think about it and to have a quick chat and come up with an answer. Off you go. And everyone else can have a bit of a think too. 60 seconds. That's the boy, Sean. Another 10 seconds. Okay, looks like you've got an answer or two. Right, any volunteers? What would you do if you needed help and you had to approach Noble? Yeah. Oh, did you all hear that? Ask politely and compliment them. Right. Was there any? Yes, thanks, Sean.
Flatter them.
Flatter them. Where's he learning all these things? Okay, that's good. Anyone else like to comment? Feel free any time during the night. Okay. Okay, good. Thanks, Jenny. That's good. All right, well, let's see what happened there. There we are. There's Noble. He's looking worse than ever now. And David's men have approached him. Now, what actually happened was this. David's approach, as you both said, was respectful. The men used the word peace three times. We come in peace. That's how they used it. They said please, which is good manners, isn't it? David said, greet him in my name. That was to say, you know, there's a half reasonable person making this request. Peace be to you, your house, to all that you have. Your shepherds have been with us. We did them no harm. Nothing was pinched. Ask them. They'll tell you that we behaved properly. We protected them. Therefore, let us find favour in your eyes. Now, those comments that you made about how you would approach are exactly what David's men did. So that's really good. For we come on a feast day, the men said. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son David. So that's really nice. Think tank question number two. If you were asked to help David, how would you respond? We're twisting it around this time. We're not asking, can you help? But we are the person who has been asked in that nice way that you mentioned. Would you like to answer that one? Just have a look at that one for the next 60 seconds. If you were asked to help David, how would you respond? We might be lucky enough to get a couple of adult answers this time too, mightn't we? Okay, have you got something to respond to? If you were asked to help David, how would you respond? Who's volunteered? Sean again?
I'd probably give him maybe 5% of the sheep.
Okay, so... Protection. All right. So, maybe 5%. He'd give him 5%. Okay, and... And anyone else got a comment? Yeah? Did you have one?
No.
All right. Now, what about others? If you were asked to help David after he'd asked so, or his men had asked so nicely, how would you respond?
Oh, well, I would give David everything he wanted and then double it.
That's good, James.
That's
Dad's best. Anyone else? Oh, you'd want to want a reference from them. Okay, all right. So a little bit of doubt there. Okay, well, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. Uh-oh. There's Noble and the men. Noble's response is this, and I believe there's a tinge of sarcasm in this. Who's David? Who's the son of Jesse? Many servants these days are breaking away from their masters. They're just escaping slaves. Shall I take my bread and water and meat killed for my shearers and give it to anyone? So, it's not a very nice response from Noble. So, Acts 2 looks at Noble's rejection of David's request, which was very reasonable. Well, what do we learn from this? Well, we already can see something to do with riches. Here's Nabal, who's got more of everything that you can poke a stick at, and he's not prepared to share anything with the men. Answer this question. Do great riches equal great men? Shaking heads. Okay. Anyone want to say anything about that? Why not? Why aren't... Yep. Oh, okay. Great riches might make a person boastful. That's a good answer, isn't it? Yep. Any other thoughts? Yes, sir. Oh, a selfish person. A selfish rich person. Yeah, good.
I'm not sure it says it, but somewhere it says it's easier for a camel to fit in the eye of an eagle than for a rich man to go in the kingdom of God.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Okay, so they're very good answers. Do great riches equal great men? The answer is no. Despite others' needs and his riches, Nabal had no honour or honesty. He was, as we've said before, rude and cross and ill-humoured. He was evil, hard, oppressive, self-centred and greedy. So he's not particularly nice. And remember who he's married to. That's right. Sue just said that he is snubbing the prospective king of Israel. So that's pretty bad. All right, so if we start thinking about a moral to that story, I guess you've got a number of things coming to mind. Even a fool can be rich. Or even a rich person can be a fool. And we remember that verse that Jesus taught us in the Beatitudes, where your treasure is, there will be your heart also. So that suggests that Nabal's heart was really in his riches above everything else that life was all about. Think tank question 3. Given such rudeness, how would you feel and respond? 60 seconds. How would you feel and respond after that? Okay, got some responses there? Yes, I've...
Going for attack.
Okay, go for an attack. Is that what you mean? Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Sean?
Finishing on the spot.
Oh, okay. So we've got some pretty dramatic sort of responses here, haven't we?
Could,
yes.
Could try another plea.
Yes. Try again. Yeah, okay. All right, any other... Righto. Okay. They're very good responses, and I can see you've given a lot of thought. Okay. David actually feels jilted. He feels really, really hard done by. And I think we would too, wouldn't we? This is his reaction. Surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness. Nothing was missed. He's returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David, and more so if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him. Every man strap on his sword. So I think your answers are in part correct. Get into them was your thought, wasn't it? So David, when it says, if I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him, David is going to wipe out all of David's people. The lot. Sorry, Nabal's people, I beg your pardon. So, they're ready armed, they're ready to go. Well, let's have a look. We've talked about responses and we're now talking about reactions, aren't we? David reacts and he's bent on revenge. Let's see things in proportion, hopefully. Here's a question. Is David overreacting? He's taking 400 armed men to wipe out one fool's empire. Any comments from anybody? Is he overreacting? Being very thorough. Okay, I think he's.
I'm not sure he made it a matter of credit
for it. No, okay. Okay, good, Catherine. We have to remember that fourth character, don't we, in the play. Is David overreacting? The answer is yes. What is David's sin, then, at this stage? Ah, good. Thanks, Glenn. He's doing things in his own strength. And as Catherine said, he hasn't made it a matter of prayer. So his sin is, in a nutshell, anger. And in Proverbs we read, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be like him yourself." Wow, that's pretty straightforward, isn't it? And also Paul says in Romans, "Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." So that fourth character is being brought into what Paul is saying there, isn't he? Now, these are the sorts of things that we come up against in everyday life. Sometimes we are infuriated over what is happening around us. And we can take some advice from David in this case when he finally learns these lessons. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, one of Nabal's fearful young men rushes to Abigail. Nabal insulted David and the men. He is worried because he knows that David is ropeable. And he goes on to say they've respected and protected us and our sheep, and David's on the warpath. Nabal can't help. He's worthless and unapproachable. He's one of these characters you cannot speak with and make any sense out of what their reasoning happens to be. They will not give an inch when they're listening to someone else. Consider what you do, for harm is coming. Consider what you do, Abigail, for harm is coming. So here we've got two very powerful men at loggerheads. This young man is afraid of what's going to happen. He goes to Abigail, of all people, this beautiful, intelligent young woman who is Nabal's wife. Well, Act 4, the plot is thickening, isn't it? Abigail responds with reason and courage. Think tank number 4, question 4. David's coming to wipe you out. What would you do? I'm looking forward to this solution. I think we might have several opinions here, several answers. Let's go around the group. Did you have something, Poppy? No? Tell us what Poppy was going to tell us. Anything, love? No? Okay. Okay. Yep.
Run away.
Run away. That sounds like a fair thing, doesn't it? Yep.
I'm trying to
get help with other people. Right, okay.
Give him what he wanted in the first place.
Oh, okay. Give him what he wants in the first place. Rightio. And anything to add? Okay, reason with Nabal. There we are. Have another shot. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's see what happens. There's beautiful Abigail. Her response is along these lines: be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Remember, she is a wonderful God-fearing woman, and she is recalling the words that she knows God has taught her. A soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. Okay, so what's she going to do with those? Her strategy. She decides to be a peacemaker. She first of all listens to all the evidence, not reacting before she responds. She identified the steps needed to solve the conflict. What was the need in the first place? The need was food, wasn't it? She addressed the need. Okay, that's what they needed. I'll work on that part of it. She interceded on Nabal's behalf. She distracted from the anger, and she injected care and kindness. Complete contrast to what Nabal is like. Now, how did she distract from the anger? We'll find that out. First of all, as far as addressing the need, she loaded donkeys with, have a listen to this load of food, 200 loaves of bread, 2 jugs of wine, 5 butchered sheep, 5 measures of grain, which I looked up, and it's 1,000 litres, roughly. 1,000 litres of grain, that's quite a lot. 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs. This is how she distracted from the anger. She didn't tell Nabal. What if she'd told him? What would have happened? He would have been infuriated, wouldn't he? He would have really gone off the deep end. So she didn't tell Nabal, but committed to personally follow up what the needs were of David's men. So we can ask this question now. Is Abigail doing the right thing? What do you think? How does it sound? How does it sound to the think tank? Does that sound like a reasonable thing? Got the thumbs up? Very good. Okay. All right, let's see what happens a little further. First of all, remember who Abigail is married to. A godly wife does not have to be a doormat. That's one thing we learn. Submission does not mean turning off discernment. And thirdly, she was in fact saving Nabal and his men and David's men as well, who were quite innocent. They weren't the perpetrators of all this problem, were they? Nabal was behind the trouble. And yet there would have been so many innocent people, and this is quite typical of war, isn't it? Any war. The victims usually consist of a huge percentage of civilians who are not involved as military. Were you going to say something? No? Okay, so we have this momentous meeting, because Abigail has committed to come and see David. David's still feeling hard done by, and he expects one good turn to deserve another. So her dangerous mission is this. On a donkey, she sent ahead all those supplies of food. She respectfully approaches David. She comes along on a donkey. Does that ring a bell? Who else was on a donkey? Who else on a donkey was going to make peace? Yes, sir? You said Jesus, didn't you? Okay, so this is a wonderful act of humility on her part, isn't it? All right, so Abigail saw David, hurried down from the donkey, and have a look at what she does. She falls before David on her face and bows to the ground. How humble is that? How respectful is that? And Abigail then begins her great soliloquy, which is one of the great speeches of the Bible.
When Abigail saw David, she quickly dismounted and bowed low before him. "I accept all blame in this matter, my lord," she said. "Please listen to what I say, what I want to say. Nabal is a wicked and bad-tempered man, but please don't pay any attention to what he said. He is a fool, just like his name means. But I didn't see the messengers you sent. Sir, since the Lord has kept you from murdering and taking vengeance into your own hands, I pray by the life of God and by your own life too, that all your enemies shall be as cursed as Nabal is. And now, here is a present I have brought to you and your young men. Forgive me for my boldness in coming out here. The Lord will surely reward you with eternal royalty for your descendants, for you are fighting his battles, and you will never do wrong throughout your entire life. Even when you are chased by those who seek your life, you are safe in the care of the Lord your God, just as though you were safe inside his purse. But the lives of your enemies shall disappear like stones from a sling. When the Lord has done all the good things he promised you and has made you king of Israel, you won't want the conscience of a murderer who took the law into his own hands. And when the Lord has done these great things for you, please remember me."
What beautiful words. And what is going to happen with David after hearing that? Well, Abigail has shifted the whole focus of this drama, hasn't she? And despite the true situation, Abigail accepts responsibility for Nabal's folly and rudeness. Just disregard him. She says, "Blame me if you wish for this." And what does that do? Massive distraction from the hatred that is being built up against Nabal. "The Lord has restrained you from blood guilt. Let your enemies and those who seek to do evil be as Nabal. Evil shall not be found in David while he lives." So she praises him, and he is feeling much softer, much gentler, much more reasonable as this interaction proceeds. And the outcome is going to be that wonderful feeling of being free of any guilt. And all of us have been through that, when we know that either we are innocent of something that's happened, or we know that we are forgiven for something that has happened. Or we know that we've made amends with people that we've locked horns with. We know this. And God has designed us to be that way. He's given us that conscience, hasn't he? That conscience that can be clean and free, or it can be burdened down with guilt of not resolving a problem. So the lesson from Abigail is that we can trust that God actually takes care of us, and we need to beware of taking things into our own hands. So Abigail is the peacemaker. Now, for everyone, what is involved in peacemaking? Just off the top of your head, I haven't got any answers in mind. Just let's hear what comes to mind.
Courage.
Peace.
Humility.
Good.
Humility.
Yeah, humility and.
Respect.
Great. Okay.
Patience.
Right. Have you heard any negative comments? Not a one. They are all super positive, and that is what peacemaking achieves. Thanks for those responses. So, being honest and humble, we see that when Abigail admitted Nabal's faults and in fact took responsibility for them. She didn't have to. She didn't act the way Nabal did, but she distracted from the problem so much by saying, "I'll take responsibility for those terrible things that Nabal is doing." In addition to being honest and humble, she knows how to listen. What a wonderful virtue that is, being able to listen. For instance, Nabal's men said, "One cannot speak to him. We can't speak to him. We can't sort it out with him. He's hopeless." But Abigail listened to every detail. She was swift to hear. So being honest and humble, knowing how to listen and knowing how to respond. We don't have to rush into things. David sought vengeance. That was his solution. He was going to rush into that. Abigail offered sustenance. She went to the food issue and offered David food to solve the problem. And this lovely positive proverb, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. That's a really positive picture as well, isn't it? So Abigail's three steps to resolve conflict: defuse the offence, puncture the offence, intercede on behalf of wrongdoers, as Jesus has done, and address the initial need. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than ourselves. And that's what Paul says in Philippians. Right, we've got a couple more acts to go. Act 5. What's happening to David's mind, do you think, at this stage? Calming. Calming down, isn't it? So David recognises the reprieve that he's had. Another think tank question, number 5. How would you respond to Abigail's approach to David and why? How would you respond to Abigail's approach? All said? Okay. What do you think?
Be thankful.
Oh, be thankful. Right, that's beautiful, isn't it? Two words, two simple words. Be thankful. What else? Anything else? Yep, thanks, Sean. Oh, sorry.
Take the anger out of Nabal instead of having just
Nabal. Oh, okay. Just pick on Nabal, not the men. Right, okay, maybe that's for another day. Maybe that's going to be done later. Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Okay, good answers. Thanks for talking about it like that. So she won over David as a man after God's own heart. That's what David was called by God. He's a man after God's own heart. Wonderful. And she understood that. And because she understood who David was, because she understood what the problem was, and because she was courageous enough to handle it, David was so grateful. So, so grateful. And he melted. David is melting. Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. He is melting away. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt. For surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there had not been left to Nabal so much as one male. They'd all be dead. She has stopped that from happening. So honesty and truth usually work. So now we come to Act 6, redemption. Redemption means being saved, doesn't it? Let's have a look at some key points from this little bit. Abigail is obviously God's messenger, and she has prevented David from sinning. Can you imagine this? How silly is it? Killing a giant with one rock. Who was the giant that David killed? Yes, that's right. Exactly. Goliath. Why would I need 400 men to get even over an insult? What a silly thing to do. And David realises that. Abigail has prevented the annihilation of Nabal's entire house. She has rekindled David's love for God. He has been taught by Abigail about the way in which God responds to difficulties. And that is an attractive prospect. David is still melting. He had a teachable spirit,
And as the next king of Israel, he needs to think clearly, doesn't he? He acknowledged God's role in defusing a disaster. And he swallowed his pride and he backed down. Wonderful attributes. So what's the big question for us? Can we admit our mistakes? And if not, why not? Act 7. Final act of the play. Love all. This is a terrible, terrible ending for Nabal. God is going to strike Nabal. Abigail came to Nabal and behold, he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king. Plenty of food, plenty of drink. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. Didn't tell him a single thing about her encounter with David, how she'd taken food to him, how the whole problem had been defused. She told him nothing. How wise is that? Because we know what would have happened if she had told him. But in the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, so that he became as a stone. Any chance that God's at work here? It's suggested, because it says his heart died within him, that he had a heart attack or a stroke. Maybe the news of his wife, his beautiful wife, deceiving him so badly in his eyes was too much for him to bear. About 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal and he died. That's Nabal out of the way. David didn't have to lift a finger. Think tank question 6. Why does God remove Nabal so suddenly? Question for everyone in the think tank as well. How's the speed decision going? All right, any thoughts there? The boys? Yep.
Could have been a reward for Abigail, because he was a bad
husband. Okay, reward for Abigail. Perhaps that could have been it.
Justice for his wrongdoing.
Ah, okay. Remember, God's at work. Justice for his wrongdoing. Any other thoughts there? Yes, thanks, love. Yeah, yeah, there would have been nasty consequences if it hadn't happened, wouldn't there? Yep, okay. Any other thoughts on this issue? Because it's quite an important phase in this drama, isn't it? No other thoughts? Okay.
Can I just say something?
You can.
God cannot be mocked.
Ah, okay.
And Nabal mocked God by mocking David.
Mm-hmm. I think you might have heard that God will not be mocked. And he would have seen the mocking of David, a man after his own heart, as unacceptable. Okay, vanity is one of the things which gets us in the position that Nabal had found himself. He was excessively proud of his own achievements. And he was a fool by name and a fool by nature. Can you, any of the mums... did you ever think of calling your son Nabal when he was born? No wisecracks. Well, of course, this is so Bible-esque, isn't it? The Bible is full of names that have a direct application to the person who bears that name. Okay, Nabal's name means fool, and that's exactly what he was. He showed no interest in God's anointed. and Nabal came to nothing. In spite of all his riches, in spite of all his power, he is now nothing. That is vanity, isn't it? That is vanity of vanities. And he's not in God's good books either, which is really a massive loss. So his sudden death shows the futility of vanity, self-centeredness, and blatant disregard for God's ways and God's people. So what's our response to these circumstances? Well, love the Lord your God and your neighbour as yourself. Be kind to one another. There's so much about this, isn't there? All the fruits of the Spirit, we know what they are. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Here's another lesson from Jesus, where moths and vermin, rats and mice destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Divine chemistry is settling in. Remember, this drama, this act in the drama is called Love All. David wastes no time. It's evident of that. And when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept back his servant," that's himself, David, "from evil. The Lord has also returned the evil doing of Nabal on his own head." When the messengers arrived at Carmel, they told Abigail, "David has sent us to take you back to marry him." Another little journey. When she arrived, she bowed to the ground and responded. Have a listen how humble she is. "I, your servant, would be happy to marry David. I would even be willing to become a slave washing the feet of his servants." She is just so relieved to be rid of Nabal, for one thing, but she is also wonderfully heartened to be in David's care. So David marries Abigail. What a wonderful story. Quickly getting ready, she took along five of her servant girls as attendants, mounted her donkey and went with David's messengers, and so she became his wife. So in the arms of David, a valiant soldier and future king, Abigail was faithful to the end. We remember those words, "I am your maidservant." So one would think that Abigail would be a magnificent only wife, wouldn't one? Men. Michal was David's first wife. She's the daughter of King Saul. Abigail is his second wife. Bathsheba is his next wife. And then we have another five following on. And then we read in the 2nd of Samuel 5, David took more concubines, girlfriends and wives from Jerusalem. How many is unknown. Oh dear. So there are some lessons for us in this. Times were different then, and I think anyone would be delighted to have a wife like Abigail, and I'm sure we have many of them here. Like Nabal, we deserve death because of our sins. That is foolishness. But we have Jesus as our solution. Like Abigail, Jesus was willing to sacrifice himself to intercede and to save us from blunders and ultimate death. Like David, we can be honest in our self-examination, admit our foolishness, and know that God will be merciful. And in Ephesians 4, Paul says, "As a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love." So there's the plot. This has been a true story. about ordinary people like you and me who, when challenged by ordinary circumstances, either react or respond. It shows how cause and effect in godly human relationships can perform miracles for good. So we have the beauty and the beast. My father is joy, is the meaning of Abigail. Thanks everyone, and especially the think tank, you did a wonderful job.